Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and as always, I'm joined by Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison for another busy show. As we look back at the nail-biting fourth Ashes test, England avoiding a potential whitewash by holding out for that dramatic draw at the SCG. And we'll ask, inevitably, how the team should look for this week's fifth test in Hobart. We'll be joined later by West Indies all-rounder Jason Holder, and we'll look ahead to England's test match tour in March. We'll hear from a brutally honest Stuart Broad and the England captain, Joe Root. So there's plenty to come over the next hour. You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. Let's look ahead to Hobart then. Today night game, of course. But before we talk about the bowling options, who's going to keep wicket? Johnny Bairstow, Sam Billings or Ollie Pope?
Sam Billings has had to drive 9 hours across Australia to get to, well, see across Australia. It's only gone through one, going from two states very close to each other. That tells you how big Australia is. He's had to do some isolation, but he's probably, for me, he would just be there for cover. I would go down the road of Ollie Pope. It's whoever keeps, it's a one-off game, right? It's a one-off game. At this minute in time, Ollie Pope's not on the side, and I'd like him to get in it because I think we have a tendency in this country to pick players, discard them when they're 24, 25, 26, and they're a better player when they're 29, 30. I'm working with one at the moment, Adam Live. You know, he had a test two, he's got a test 100. He's probably a better player now than what he was when he played the game. For Ollie Pope, he's the only one I try and stick with. I don't mind them leaving him out because I think he was a bit frantic in the early part of the Ashes. But I think maybe it is time for him to come back. My thing with Ollie Pope is, and the mindset of Ollie Pope is, I'd be tempted to go, well, if I can't, you know, Milan's got three sewn up, Root's got four sewn up, Stokes will always bat five, Bairstow he's just getting a test match 100 in Australia at six. If I was Ollie Pope, I'd be tempted to say, if I back my hands, because I thought he kept really well, 69 yeah. overs, I thought he kept really well, four catches, which was a record, equal record. I'd be tempted to go to the selection panel and say, here, right, give me number seven and give me the gloves. And I tell you what, that would make England a very, very strong unit. Because I think the next cab off the ranks, Ben Folkes. But there's question marks of Ben Folkes against, you know, the quicker bowlers in English conditions, in, you know, Caribbean conditions and the ball bouncing. The one thing about Ollie Pope, he's a fantastic batsman. And if he's at number seven, he's got time to recover from keeping. Was it a one-off? Very, very competent, very, very comfortable, looked good for 69 overs? Or is it something that we need to explore? Even if it's just a one-off, I think I'd go into the Hobart test match with Ollie Pope behind the sticks, because I don't think there's any longevity in Sam Billings. And I think you get another one of your best batsmen in the team. So, and then it will be who bats at number five. Bairstow's at six. Johnny can't keep because I think he's got a busted thumb. So then it'll be a case of who comes in at number five. I don't think Ben Stokes should play. You could see how much it was hurting him. I think we should have sent him home with Joss Butler, because the most important thing now is his recovery from that injury, which could take up to 2 months and more. And then if you're then going and picking him again for the West Indies, you're basically putting him back in a position which has got him injured in the first place. Hasn't played a lot of cricket. With no preparation whatsoever, asked to go and play at test match level against one of the top teams in the world in their own back garden, which is Australia. Now, if you go and pick him for the West Indies and he goes to the West Indies and plays, he's going to go in with no preparation. Are you going to ask him to bowl bouncers again? You're potentially getting him injured again. So I think it's a difficult decision how you manage Ben Stokes, but I would have sent him home. I don't think there's any logic in keeping him in Australia because he just didn't look fit in that second innings. Yes, he got runs, but it was the character got runs. It was the heart and the desire that we all know Ben Stokes is great for that got him runs. I'd be tempted not to. I would have been tempted to send him home from Sydney.
Okay, let's just remind ourselves of what Joe Root said about Ben Stokes in Sydney after the test.
It seemed to like refocus him when it came to him to bat. I don't know. You could see he had that look in his eye, which you've seen a couple of times before when he's been playing Test cricket, and he looked very much engaged in what was going on. It was obviously difficult when you see one of your most influential players walk off the field as he did, clearly in a lot of pain. Now, it was a wholehearted effort in many respects from Ben and from the rest of the guys as well. His performance with the bat was more like a Ben Stokes near his best, which is a really exciting thing to see going into the last game.
Well, quite clear that Joe Root doesn't sound like a man who wants Ben Stokes to be sent home. And here's the question I've got for you. Would Ben Stokes really, in any way, however hard he forced himself, have accepted not completing this journey? I mean, I just think the character of that. Wouldn't he say, no way, yeah, I'm finishing this journey?
I'm expecting him to do that, but I'm in charge and I'm sending you home. That's what I'm doing. I'm not, honestly. That's what coaches and managers are for. You see, you, I'm sending you home because the reason you've got injured is because you didn't have any preparation. That's not your fault. Yeah, you made yourself available for the Ashes and there was no cricket leading into it. You know, there was no cricket leading into it. So all the nets, all the indoor schools, all the practice that you have in that is fantastic. It's great. There's no substitute for 150 overs in the field, which he did. There's no substitute for that. You can be as fit as you want. Now, how do we get him in a position to get him body hard, ready, gear him hardened, his body? And that was always going to be the issue with Ben Stokes. And to ask him time after time to bowl bouncers, you're just asking for him to get injured. It was like during the last test match, Mark Woods bowling. They're setting up a declaration. Mark Woods bowling 150 kilometres an hour. He's going into his fifth over. And I'm on commentary and I'm nearly swearing. What is he bowling for? You know, we've got a bright light that come out of this Ashes. And we're potentially, if we want to win in Hobart, we're potentially putting Mark Wood the risk of getting injured here. There's no real need for him to bowl. You've got Jack Leach. Yeah, I know you try to waste time, but I couldn't understand that. And things like that is what contributes to get bowlers injured. And that's why Ben got injured for me. Ben got injured because he didn't have any preparation going into the series. He fielded a countless amounts of overs in the test series. And he never got a chance to rest because the batting unit didn't score enough runs. And people will say, well, what has the batting unit got to do with Ben Stokes' body? Ben Stokes fielded nearly every day in that test series. Every day in that test series, Ben Stokes is putting his fielding boots on to go outside and field and stand around for a long period of time. And with no recovery, you talk about a red zone. You're running the risk of keeping players in the red zone. He's too important. He's too important for this team and balancing this team out for him not to be playing. So you've got to get him ready to play and to stay in the side rather than us losing him now for the best part of... He's going to go to the IPL. So he's going to go to the IPL in April. Are we just sort of going back to square one? If we play him this week, then we fly him all the way home and then he has to get ready for the Caribbean, which he'll not be fit for from a bowling point of view because if he's got a side strain, that's minimum 8 weeks. And then all of a sudden, because he's got no real... Or his preparation is hampered by because we're trying to sort of then all you're doing is you're not getting him 100% fit, and then not 100% fit cricketer, no matter how good or how big a character Ben Stokes is, then it's pretty pointless. So you know, get him fit properly, get him prepared and ready to go again, and we'll see the benefit. We'll not see the benefit of an 85% Ben Stokes.
Finally, in this section, What about Haseeb Hameed? I mean, there was a brilliant analysis piece by Steve James in the Times talking about how out of touch and desperate he looked. There were a lot of people who were surprised that he kept his place and it was Rory Burns who was dropped. I mean, overall, it was a much improved batting performance at the SCG, but do you make that change? Do you bring Burns back for the last test in place of Hameed? Zach Crawley batted beautifully, by the way. You should give him a mention.
Yeah, yeah, Zach batted brilliantly, but Manners, did we not say that right at the very start of the series?
You did.
Zach Crawley had to play. No, we both did. We both thought the bouncing ball, Zach Crawley, tall guy, would probably play the bouncing ball the best. I wouldn't have dropped Burns as much as Burns infuriates me with his technique and the way he is. He always gives a bowler a chance to give a... He's always given him a chance by the way his body shape is and movements. I would have dropped Hameed and left Burns in because I thought Burns was drinking out the last chance saloon bar. I didn't think Burns comes back. I really didn't. I didn't think Burns would ever wear the England shirt again. But I think he wears it at Tasmania now because I looked at Hameed's dismissal in the second innings. Mitchell Starc bowling him. And I tell you what, as a number 11, I'd be embarrassed by that. I'd have gone off and I'd have told... I wasn't somebody who tore the changing rooms that much. But if I'd seen that again, I'd have gone, what on earth is that? His feet were going down like stone. His arms was going... His back was going towards extra cover. And you could have gotten a double-decker ball sideways through the middle of it. And he's supposed to be our opening batsman. So I don't want to make mock of him, but that tells me he's just fried. His brain's fried. So this kid needs, for his own good, to come out of the firing line. And Burns goes back in. And the combination with Burns and Crawley, and why I said that right at the very start, was Crawley has this way of hitting balls well down the ground. He's a positive player. He wants to score. And the left and right-hand combination would be good because the one thing Rory Burns does, he scores in unusual areas to get off strike because his technique's sometimes all over the place. He gets a lot of inside edges and outside edges into gaps. So the rotation of strike not only works for Rory Burns, but if he's continuously getting good balls and he's getting inside edges onto his pad, it goes past short leg into mid-wicket, the change of strike, if the right-handed batsman comes on and he gets over pitch and he belts it for four, all of a sudden, they stop thinking about Rory Burns because then they think about Zach Crawley. At the minute, they can think all they want about Rory Burns because Haseeb Hameed is going nowhere. He's stuck in his crease, he's blocking balls, and they're digging a hole. Where Burns and Crawley, I think the combination would work a lot better because Crawley had looked to belt it, where Burns is a little bit more reserved. He gets off strike in unusual ways. But bowlers will then be put pressure on because of the way Crawley's playing. And Burns might just be able to get into an innings and ease into an innings. So that's why I'd make the change.
So we're looking ahead to the fifth and final test in Hobart, which is exactly what Stuart Broad said in very clear terms after the Sydney Test match. And what's really interesting to me is that in so many cases, even with a senior player like Stuart Broad, if they feel that speaking honestly, talking the truth, is getting them into trouble and losing them friends in influential places, they sometimes, mostly actually, shut up, if they want to carry on, as Stuart Broad obviously does. But here he is with some advice for the group.
It's a mindset now that I think within this group, instead of looking ahead at what's coming next year, what's coming in the winter, what's coming in the next Ashes series. Actually, can we get back to the real basics of what's ahead of us right now? How are we winning this next test match? Because sometimes when your brain leads you too far away from what's in front of you, you're not focused on delivering what you need to deliver in that test match. So for us as a group, I'd sort of urge us as players to, we don't know what the world's going to look like. We don't know what cricket's going to look like in June and in next November. But can we win tomorrow? Can we win the next opportunity that's in front of us? And I think that should be a real focus for the England cricket team going forward, because it's all well and good planning for Ashes and planning for the next away Ashes and looking at the World Test Championship. But actually, if you don't win the battle in front of you, it's all irrelevant. So a bit of a short-term mindset, in my opinion, for the next couple of games, because there's some points to prove for every player.
Stuart Broad saying We need to concentrate on what's happening tomorrow and the day after and not worry so much about what's happening in the future. And do you know what? I mean, you would be hard-pressed not to think of that as a little bit of a dig, maybe not at Chris Silverwood, but at the whole management team. You know, it's a sort of, he doesn't mention rest and rotation, but he is saying there's no point in looking 3, 4, 5 months ahead, year ahead, if you're getting belted next week.
No, well, and he's right. He's always right. Stuart knows what he's saying. He's calculated. He's good at what he does. That's why he's going to walk straight off. That's why he's going to hang his bowling boots up. And he's not going to do Sir Alistair Cook style and go and bowl 40 overs for knots a week. He's going straight into the commentary box. He's going to pick a microphone up and do exactly what he says in that interview, which is tell us the honest truth, be nice and open, not sugarcoat things. And that's why he's going to make a fantastic broadcaster. But he's spot on. We get too far with talking about too far ahead what's coming around the corner when we are miles away in English cricket at this moment in time from with the Red Bull stuff. We were bottom of the World Test Championship, and we can't seem to find a way of getting moving Broad and Anderson on, because in the grand scheme of things, you would have more or less a ready-made replacement, and we've got one close, I think, for Stewart, but Stewart's 5 years younger than Jimmy, and since Jimmy turned 35, his average has been ridiculous, and I think that's why Stewart says what he says, because he wants to carry on playing. I don't think we've got a replacement for Anderson. I think Robinson's the closest thing we've got to Broad. And if Robinson's body looks after itself, then he might be able to nail down that tall bowler that hits in and around that off stump. But Broad is still, he's still relevant. And it's all well good having these opinions. And it's all well good saying what you're saying. But boy, do you have to perform. And Stewart's done that. He's come out and he's performed. And he's had the right to say what he said, because when you look at COVID, I think it's been a good excuse for the England selectors to have what they thought was a plan to look after people. But the problem is, you look after people, that's right. But what you look after them for, when you get to it, then you nail down your best team. England's team for the first test match for Brisbane should have been the same team for the second one, same team for the third one, possibly same team for the fourth one, because that's how we're going to win the Ashes. We've rest and rotated all these players to get us in a position to win the Ashes. And then what do? We make a complete hollux of it because we don't pick the right team in the first test match. We do it in the second test match. And then all of a sudden we are chasing a formula. Wait, hold on. What have you been doing for 2 years? You know, for 2 years, you've been chasing a formula to get people in and out of bubbles, in and out of life. And we understand that, know that for a fact. But what you've done it for was to try and be the best team you possibly can in the Ashes. And that was the best team for 5 test matches. And unfortunately, they haven't done that. I've got a horrible feeling that Mark Wood bowled them 5 overs at the end of the day because he's not going to play in Hobart.
Oh,
and that,
no,
for me, would just be suicide.
Hang on, Harmy. I was just about to ask you. Surely it's just Robinson for Leach, isn't it? And Broad, Anderson, Robinson, and Mark Wood. Surely you don't need to.
Man, is that's a logical thing? But how many times have we sat here on the Tuesday night cricket collective and gone, "What are they doing?" We get that all the time, and it's just this standing out there. We can't get rid of Broad and Anderson because we haven't got ready-made replacements for Broad and Anderson. And on the other hand, why would I want to get rid of Broad and Anderson? They're still the best two bowlers, still two of the best bowlers we've got. So we shouldn't be talking about Age's numbers. They can play together. They've proved they can play together. If you pick them together in 7 test matches in England, more often than not, if you put runs on the board, we'll win. We've done it for years. And that's never going to change my opinion. While Stuart Broad can keep going to the well and Jimmy Anderson can keep going to the well for 4th and 5th spells and they can keep doing it, fine. You pick them because their skill levels are high. If there's somebody else, which there might be 1 or 2 underneath, then you might try and see what it's like, because I can't imagine the group being free because Broad and Anderson have been there all the time and things are set in stone. Management come in, captains come in. They try and change it, but they can't change it because they've got these two senior guys who are still powerful in that environment. But that's never going to change. But until you've got a ready-made replacements, that's, we think in a year's time or 2 years' time is going to be better or as good, then unfortunately, you've got to keep playing them. And they're still the best at what we've got.
All right, let's turn our attention to Australia just briefly. And let's start with Usman Khawaja's eyebrow-raising comments after his double hundreds, his twin hundreds at the SCG.
Yeah, I'm probably quite resigned to the fact that I probably will miss out just the way, just talking to George Bailey and the selectors about continuity and making sure we have a similar team and what team they picked for the first test match. I'm not totally against that either. The process, I felt like throughout my career, a lot of changes were made and I was on the wrong side of them from my point of view a few times. And I'm the first to say that I think there needs to be structure and stability. I know how hard it is for a cricketer, chopping and changing and on your confidence and whatnot. So I actually like the processes that the selectors have been taking throughout the series. So yeah, at the moment, I'm not really expecting to play the next test match, but I'll always be ready for whatever happens, because who knows, someone else may get COVID, something might happen. You just got to stay ready.
So Usman Khawaja, and it's interesting. I mean, he says that he got the impression he's not playing in Hobart after speaking to the chairman of selectors, George Bailey, who spoke a lot about the importance of continuity. And he says he agrees with it. Really? I mean, that, you know, exceptions have to be made, don't they? Maybe he opens, but then would that be fair on him? Marcus Harris hasn't had a great series. Well, he has compared to England's openers. But honestly, what do they do with I don't know, there's three or four players who deserve to play who aren't going to. But Khawaja, after a couple of hundreds at Sydney, doesn't play the next test, really?
Yeah, that's up there with Ajaz Patel, that, isn't it? If in New Zealand, it's, I think he plays. Does he go? I think he might go in first. He might open. But I could understand his comments. Actually, I could understand George Bailey's thinking in a way, which is, if we go, we potentially now could go with 235 or 30, mid-30 openers when we've got somebody that we've invested a bit of time in, Marcus Harris. But on the other hand, with that, with Harris, I'd also be looking at it and thinking, a bit like the Ollie Pope one, well, we might just take him out of the firing line for a little bit and then put him back in, because the longevity of Usman Khawaja at the top probably wouldn't be that long. Maybe he's 9 months to 9 to 12 months. But I can see the logical reason why George Bailey might be thinking, right, Travis Head comes back in the middle, got 100 in the series, batted really well. Unfortunately, he got COVID, but he's not the longevity. It's a bit like what Stuart's saying about, you know, you pick your best team now and don't look too far in the future. This is different when it comes to Australia because they're actually performing. The performance levels are very, very high. So if somebody at 23, 25 is performing at the standard that the 35-year-old is, or you potentially think that he can over the course of the next 12 months, then you go with that younger person, your younger player, because you hope that his ceiling height when he gets to 27, 28, 29, when you've backed him, will go beyond what the 35-year-old has. So that's the idea of why you're looking at that. So maybe it's Khawaja, maybe it's George Bailey and Justin Langer. Just say to Usman Khawaja, you're going to be number 12 most of the time. And if there's an injury, you're in. So you're basically being, you know, the perfect man to have in a crisis that you can bat 1-6. You know your game. You're so experienced. And if we do have a whack on a finger, somebody gets COVID, an illness in the morning, we're not devaluing the group by putting you in and you can bat anywhere you want because of your experience. And that's not a bad thing to have.
Just very quickly, Harmy, finally, Pat Cummins said that Scott Boland, who's had two of the most extraordinary test matches, is feeling sore, which I think is a way of saying he's not playing in Hobart. So who comes in, Jai Richardson or Michael Nisa?
I don't think it really matters, to be honest. I think when you're bowling with Cummins and Stark and Lyon, you slip under the radar a little bit. But Boland hasn't slipped under any radar. This kid has bowled ridiculously well. He's bowled fantastically well. Can you get another game out of him? Is there any point? is this going to be his last test match because of the age he's at? Does he come back again in Australian summer? Because he won't play in Pakistan because the likelihood is Swepson will play because he'll play the second spinner. So was that his last test match? Does he get another go next year at the MCG and has a little benefit match when he goes out and says, thanks for winning the Ashes again? Because he was largely down to him and his bowling, you know, to get Australia over the line in MCG and then obviously what they've done this week. So I think Richardson would probably get the nod over Nisa. Richardson obviously deserves a go because he got wickets, but the Nisa fielding a lot as 12th man last week might suggest that he's trying to get some miles in his legs to play at Hobart.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and Double Ashes winner Steve Harmison. But next up, we'll look ahead to the England tour of the Caribbean, 5 T20s and 3 test matches in March with the West Indies all-rounder Jason Holder. You're listening to the Cricket Collective on TalkSport 2 with the Institute of Cricket.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2 with me, Neil Manthorpe, and former England fast bowler Steve Harmison. If you've missed any of the show or you wish to catch up, you can download the podcast from the following on feed, now available via the free TalkSport app or wherever you get your podcasts. As promised, I'm delighted to say that joining us live from the Caribbean is former captain, all-rounder Jason Holder. Jason, breaking news that the second one-day international against Ireland has been either cancelled or postponed because of COVID. So I'm going to ask you to put your news reporter's hat on briefly and give us the news on the ground.
To be fair, I don't know the full details myself. You know, we've just been informed that the second one-day has been basically postponed. I think there are a few more positive cases in the Ireland camp. And, you know, just taking the precautionary route to make sure that, you know, there are no more positive cases popping up. You know, they've had their fair share of COVID in their camp. So I'm just trying to do the relevant thing to do at this stage and just be cautious going forward.
And Jason, just explain to us how it's been for an international cricketer in COVID. Because England are having the Ashes at the minute. I lost a series 5-0 there and people say, you know what it's like to lose 5-0 in the Ashes. You know what it feels like to like these lot. But I'm like, I don't, because COVID world is a completely different world. You came to England. How has it been now? Because you travel the world in franchise cricket. How is it for an international cricketer in the COVID world? Is it that difficult mentally or is it that difficult physically?
It's a bit both, man, because I feel as though we've played more cricket than ever. And because of the bubbles, you've been made to come in earlier to do quarantines, and you know, you're just constantly in a cricket environment, and I found that hard mentally, and then obviously challenging physically with the amount of cricket that we've played. Yeah, it's been hard to stay tuned, and it just seems as though cricket is always at the forefront. You know, it's hard to take yourself away, and particularly for guys who are probably struggling on a particular tour, it's harder for them because, you know, normally you could go out and you refresh and maybe have a drink somewhere, you know, you go eat some dinner, probably see your friends or family, and that's no longer available to you once you're in a bubble. So I think it's been difficult, particularly for people who struggle. And I want to say struggle in terms of their cricket form. And then even for players who are doing well, it's still hard because it feels as though you're always constantly switched on. And that has been a mental struggle for most, if not every cricketer who's been playing since COVID.
And how is it, Jason Holder, the team member now, the captaincy is not there? Has that been an easy transition? Is it something that you thought, I enjoy not having the responsibility? Or is it Jason Holder enjoys the responsibility of captaincy?
I enjoy the responsibility. For me, it was a little strange transitioning back into just being a player. But yeah, I think I've found my role now and my calling within the team. And it's just more of one-to-one basis, you know, helping the young crop, you know, really groom them in this field of international cricket and give them, you know, all the knowledge and power they need to excel. I think at first, being on the field and not being able to, well, not having to deal with bowling changes and field placing and, you know, these tactical things has been strange, you know, but more or less, it's been a burden off my shoulders. And, you know, it's just getting to the point now where I am slowly but surely understanding now how to get back into just playing, you know, and I think I'm pretty much there. It was good to get a break before this new year. And yeah, I feel refreshed and ready to go.
If I can turn your memory back to a very, very happy time, England's last tour to the Caribbean. Of course, they haven't won since 2004, which you can ask Harmy about in a moment. But England's last tour, and particularly the Barbados Test match, which was truly, truly spectacular, with you scoring a double 100 at number 7, winning the series. I mean, we said at the time that would probably be one of your happy memories when you eventually retire, but are you looking back on it now?
Honestly, I'm past it. You know, I see a little few snippets here and there on the innings and the actual Test match, and to me, that was one of those surreal feelings, man. Everything just pretty much clicked for us in our Test match. You know, we were able to bowl England out cheaply in their first innings, and then in the second innings, you know, Ross Singer hit 8 wickets. You know, us rallying from a peculiar position, myself and Shane putting on our partnership, which really flattened the English team. You know, so that was a really good series, and our Test match stood out, obviously, but I think I'm pretty much past it, and you know, I understand that that's a time that's gone. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I would love to relive it and, you know, have it one more time. But you know, more or less, you know, it is what it is.
And you've got England coming up twice in a short period of time. Two contrasting sides. Where's the sort of West Indies at the moment in planning and preparation for, first of all, T20, where you probably become the underdogs. And then the Test matches, where you'd really fancy your chances to beat the England side. Like I say, we haven't been won in West Indies since 2004, and come off the back of an Ashes series where they've sort of underperformed.
Yeah, I think those will be two keenly contested series. Even in the T20 format, you know, we're probably in a stage where we're rebuilding, but England is probably, quote unquote, sending I wouldn't say a full-strength England team, you know, and that may be an opportunity for their guys, but also our guys to really lay their mark down and, you know, perform against quality opposition. You know, I think the lineup that they've put out is still a very, very competitive one, and they have some big-name players in their lineup. You know, I think when you look down to the Test series, it should be a really, really good Test series. I think that one, a bit more evenly matched, in my opinion, based on how both teams have been playing in the recent past. And England, obviously, would be looking to improve from their performance in Ashes, and our last tour to Sri Lanka wasn't the best for us either. So I think two teams which are budding for success and have players in their lineups who are hungry to turn things around.
Jason, just quickly, it's a massive topic, obviously, and it's unfair to ask you for a short answer, but you're in massive demand around the world in T20 leagues around the world. It almost seems from the outside as if you may be more appreciated in in other countries than they are in the Caribbean. But you still obviously hold West Indian Caribbean cricket close to your heart. You've always remained available. And it just seems that that you hold a beacon for the passion for Caribbean cricket.
Yeah, I think for me, honestly, I've been blessed because I started playing international cricket at quite a young age. And, you know, one of the things I've always had in the forefront of my mind is playing for my country. And I got in early and I've been in the team since I started, to be fair. So I didn't necessarily have to run to the leagues. You know, it's still something that I would like to do. I'd like to do a bit more of. And now that I've just crossed over and that age category, we're gone from my lovely 20s into the 30s. You know, I feel as though, you know, you need to make sun right here. I mean, right here where the sun shines, to be fair. So, yeah, it may be something I'm looking to transition into and play a little bit more franchise cricket, but still international cricket is at the forefront of my mind. And, you know, whatever I can do, contribute to West Indies cricket, and I'm willing and able to do.
You mentioned the franchise cricket. I'm always intrigued to talk to people about what it's like to change dressing rooms, go into a dressing room in Pakistan, to go into a dressing room in maybe Sri Lanka, going into an IPL dressing room, which would be a completely different dressing room to you'll ever be in because of the superstars that are involved. But then go back and what you can take back into the West Indies dressing room to potentially make some very, very good and exciting young players better.
I think for me as an eye-opener, because I obviously live and breathe in West Indies cricket, and I've been in and around that cricket all my life. And for me, I always try to make that comparison in different parts of the world. You know, two of the best experiences I've had is playing county cricket and then playing in the Big Bash and playing in Australian setup. I think those two setups are ideal for development. They've got all the resources necessary in terms of their infrastructure, the facilities, the coaching, even basically apparatus in terms of bowling machines and sidearm throwers, Merlins, these kind of things, which we in the Caribbean are not privy to everywhere we go in terms of each territory. And then just the camaraderie in which everybody goes around and goes about their business, you know, was awesome. And I took so much from those two experiences. And then you go to a league such as the IPL where you got a lot more superstars and then budding Indian superstars. It's pretty much a really good account of how successful different systems are and what you can bring back to the West Indian system to help and develop the West Indian system to get it to where it's meant to be. I think it's a work in progress, but, you know, unfortunately, we're not as blessed as certain territories financially. I think that's where a lot of strain is, you know, in terms of our financial resources. Hopefully, if in the not too distant future, we can get some more funding into our system. You know, I think we can put certain things in place where you would see perhaps in an English system or an Australian system.
Fingers crossed to that. And just finally, you can win the T20s and you can win the test matches against England. Which one do you want to go for?
To be honest, I want to do both, man. All two would be awesome. But yeah, it should be a really good series, man. I think England are to the point where questions are being asked if they could sustain the level of cricket they've been playing. And for us, a lot of questions are being asked if we could get back to, you know, our winning ways and our dominance in terms of T20 cricket. So again, they're two series that I think should be really, really good to watch. And two sides who are looking to make that progression forward and keep building.
And finally from me, Jason, the World Cup qualifiers, the fact that there is a World Cup Super League and the World Test Championship. Thumbs up from you to give context to all of these series?
Well, if it was down to me, you know, I'd be looking to pick and choose. But look, there's so much cricket being played. I just find it hard for us as a full member nation to having to go back into a World Cup qualifier. I remarked before we had to qualify for the 2019 World Cup how hard it was to actually go and play against your associate teams who you may not necessarily know a lot about. And that tournament was extremely hard because pressure was on us as a full member nation to win that competition. You know, luckily for us, we got down to the finals and qualified for the 2019 World Cup. But you see so many different teams now just sparking. I think with the advent of franchise cricket and so many cricketers moving around the world, they are now playing a lot more cricket at the higher level. So I think it's something to look forward to. And we know what we're up against in terms of qualification and what we need to do in order to be involved in the 2022 World Cup.
Jason, I know you've got some unscheduled time off, and I know you'd... it sounds like you actually might quite enjoy some time off. I was going to say you'd rather be playing, but hopefully the Ireland series gets back on track. And I tell you what, we really, really appreciate your time.
Thanks a lot for having me, man, and let's hope everything goes back on track.
And let's kick off with the final word from Stuart Broad. Actually, quite a lot of words from Stuart Broad, who, as Harmy says, does speak rather well, which is good because that's his future career. He was asked how long he intends and would like to carry on. This is what he said.
I've still got a burning desire to play the sport. I must admit, a few years ago, I was umming and ahhing, and I spent a lot of time talking to my dad about it, and he had a great belief that you should play the sport you love for as long as you can. His famous saying is, you're a long time retired, but you know, while the fire burns, you should play, because nothing replicates it. Nothing can bring you the satisfaction, the pain, the highs and the lows, and like I sort of mentioned there, they are quite addictive. And Jimmy's been an inspiration for me. I see how much drive he's still got at 39, how much energy he puts into not just the match days, but the training and the skill development. And Jimmy's record since he turned 35, averaging 21 or something. Why can't I replicate it? I'm not as skillful as Jimmy. I haven't got as much armour in my locker as he has with the skills he delivers with the ball. But I feel like I've got the motivation and the drive. Similar to him, I'm as disciplined as he is. And I feel like I can contribute as much as Jimmy has since that age. He's suffered a few injuries in that period of time. But being a Red Bull specialist, you do get gaps here and there to be able to get those injuries right. So, yeah, he's a driving force behind my mindset, and you know, he's great to be around. And I think that I've been obviously disappointed on this tour because I've not been able to have a real positive impact on it, particularly in the, you know, the big games when the Ashes are still alive and kicking. And as a senior player, as an experienced player, they're the games that you want to stand up in and play and show why you've played for so long. So I think that is a disappointment that I do hold, but it definitely running in today, bowling in that sort of that attack with Jimmy, with Woody, Leachie holding an end up. It's what Test cricket's about. You know, you keep coming back when it's tough. You get little breakthroughs. You can try and change the momentum of games. You're bowling at the best batters in the world. You have a chance of getting them out. It's very special, and not playing for a period of time. 2021 was my worst year for sure. Both with the intermittent cricket that, you know, sort of play one, miss one type experience for me. But bowling today made me again relight that fire. Like, yeah, this is awesome. You know, great stadium, good atmosphere, bowling at the world's best. It's what it's about.
Beautifully honest. And, you know, admitting that a couple of years ago he was considering his future, but why can't he replicate Jimmy Anderson and play on till his 40th year? Terrific to hear that. And you know, Harmy, age is just a number, and he is still one of England's best.
He is still one of England's best. And I've said many times on the TalkSport 2, Cricket Collective, Breakfast Show, anybody that had listened, it baffles me that he only played one relevant test match. How he didn't play in Brisbane? Oh, just forget Brisbane. People have done things that want to forget about Brisbane, and I'm high up on that list. So he should have been played. He should have played at least two, possibly all three of the test matches. He's still the best at what we've got. I'll chuck the ball to Broad and Anderson any day of the week, because between them, they know they've got a formula that grind a batsman into a position where they can get them out, because batting techniques, I think, have diminished over the years. So why not? He's 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I was questioning whether he still had the drive and the hunger to play against everybody and not just against some of the big teams. But now he seems as though once they left him out the first time, and we did it in TalkSport 2, did it in the Caribbean and Barbados when they picked Sam Curran over Brody on a one that went through, that I think that was a tipping point for Stuart, where he turned around and went, right, I'm not going nowhere, and I'm going to prove to you I'm not going nowhere. And every time he gets left out, he says something and follows it up with a decent performance. So why can't he carry on?
No reason. No reason at all, as long as he's got the desire and the fitness. And he says He said as well in that interview that he's just as disciplined as Jimmy Anderson. So, yeah, while he wants to and he's producing the goods, absolutely carry on. So on to the rest of the world. Two stories that caught my eye. South Africa refusing for the first time to give non-objection certificates, NOCs, in other words, permission for their players to participate in the upcoming Pakistan Super League, the PSL. And then Cricket Sri Lanka stating their desire for their players to give them at least 3 months' notice before they retire from Test cricket. Do you get a sense that international administrators are trying to push the tide back? They're trying to stop the waves from the sea crashing onto the beach.
Yeah, it does look that way. My only worry is that you start then losing players hand over fist, and it just takes one. It just takes one to put his middle finger up to the board and I'm off. And then if it's a big name, a big player, and he becomes a freelance cricketer, then who follows that? I think in England, around about 2008, I think Kevin Peterson and Andrew Flintoff were probably the two that were the closest that I've seen to go, right, if I'm not allowed to go and play in the IPL, I'm not bothered. I'm going freelance. I think Freddie would have done that if he hadn't gotten injured. So I look at the Sri Lanka decision. They're not really in a position of strength, players-wise, to do that. And that be interesting if one of their big guns, say Murali was still playing or Malinga was still playing, and they decided that this was going to happen. I don't see that would happen. But the South African one, really, that's a strange one for me, because we've seen a lot of cold packs leave South Africa and we've benefited. New Zealand are benefiting at the minute with Conway. But I look at that and they've just specifically said the PSL. And is it coincidence that India are in South Africa at this moment in time, Manners? Is it India putting pressure on South Africa to say, we don't want your players to go and play in Pakistan and play in politics with a game? Because I know a few times, I think Monty Panesar came out and said he was more or less told he would never get an Indian visa again if he went and played in one of the Pakistan leagues or the Kashmir league. So is this Pakistan Super League thing with South African Cricket Board, is this an India-driven thing, or is the board just said, right, no, all you players, we want you to stay in this country? But I didn't think they could do that, really, because they don't chuck their finances around for domestic cricketers.
As conspiracy theories go, Harmy, you've come up with far more exotic and less plausible ones.
What's it like from over there, from a media point of view? What are you hearing, seeing, understanding, talking? Because you talk a lot of to this sort of...
Well, it's just a timing thing. It's just that it's coming up now and South Africa have got a pretty busy international schedule. They've got a couple of test matches in New Zealand and then Bangladesh come here in March. So, and it only applies to the nationally contracted players. But here's my point, Harmy, is people, bless them, still have a belief that South Africa is one of the big teams, and they do produce some very, very good players, and they have just beaten India in a test match, and they they've had their moments, and they've been at world number one. But financially, South Africa's a tiny player. And the players, South African nationally contracted players, aren't paid very much money. And same with New Zealand, exactly the same with New Zealand. But look at the results that New Zealand are getting from their teams over the last couple of years. When the board have taken a view, we cannot compensate you for not playing in the IPL. Therefore, we will reorganize our entire international schedule, allowing you to go and earn and maximize the time that you have on the field. And I just believe that teams, countries like New Zealand and Sri Lanka and South Africa, the more they try and pin players down to contracts when they can earn twice, three times, four times as much, is futile. Absolutely, it's going to backfire, isn't it?
I was just about to ask you there. Is there somebody who is going to put that middle finger up to the board, as well as they're just starting to drip feed their players back into South African cricket? I'm with Yorkshire at the minute for a few days, and they've got Dwayne Oliveira, who is still contracted to Yorkshire, overseas player. Where does his future lie? Does he you know, not go back to Yorkshire, because this, you know, Yorkshire have got him on an overseas contract. I think I'm just speculating here. I don't know the ins and outs of what Dwayne Oliveira's contract is, but has he got a decision to make regarding Yorkshire, because he's now in the test team and the test calendar or the international calendar for South Africa. They're playing quite a bit of cricket around the English summer because they're coming to England as well. So is there going to be somebody coming out of the woodwork to go, no, I'm not having that, I'm off? And where do players set their allegiance? Do they set their allegiance on domestic cricket and playing international, or do they try and change the board's mind and say, come on, you can't do that?
Well, I think in Dwayne Oliveira's case, you know, he's played four first-class games back in the South African domestic system for the first time in 3 years. He's the leading wicket taker. He took 25 wickets of 14. And I think that Graham Smith, who's the director of cricket at Cricket South Africa, has just said, we've got a test series coming up against India, playing them at the Wanderers, which is where he's playing his cricket now. And we want to win it at all costs. And we need to do whatever we need to do. But if I was Dwayne Oliveira, I would say, listen, I'm still contracted by Yorkshire. I'm going to be loyal to them on the basis that loyalty is bought. I'm sorry, but in professional sport, loyalty is bought. And Yorkshire have bought his loyalty. So he must be available for South Africa outside of the English summer. And I think that more and more players will reach the same conclusion.
Yeah, and the money that I would imagine, the money that he'd be earning at Yorkshire, taking back to South Africa, and the currency in South Africa, would be a lot more than his contract at Cricket South Africa. And the same as some of the players that could get PSL gigs and others, that when it comes back into the Rand, you're right, spot on, 100%. Loyalty is bought in sport. No matter which sport you play, you can play football, tiddlywinks or whatever. You know, the man that's at the top and he's the best tends to be the man that earns the most money.
Oh, thanks, Sammy. You've been listening to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2. And a reminder, the fifth Ashes test between Australia and England gets underway in Hobart at 4 a.m. on Friday morning. We'll be back next week to review that series, and we'll hear exclusively from England's white ball captain, Owen Morgan. Thanks for listening once again to the Cricket Collective here on TalkSport 2.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.